This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, the chairman of the Missouri chapter of Physicians for a National Health Program, Ed Weisbart, was in Kalamazoo last week to speak with physicians. Weisbart also spoke with us about why he thinks a single-payer system is the answer to problems with health care in the United States. But first,
we know that we will be voting next year several times, in fact. Who will still be running for president by the time the Michigan primary is held, what ballot proposals will make it before voters, and how we will actually be casting ballots is still to be determined. We're going to talk about that with Western Michigan University political science professor John Clark. Thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure.
So there's a couple of different proposals in the legislature right now. Republicans are proposing eliminating straight ticket voting, where you can just basically mark off Republican and Democrat, and you get all of those candidates voted for down the ticket. There's also this idea at the same time of allowing no reason absentee voting, which we haven't had in Michigan, but we have had in many other states. Let's break these down. First of all, does straight ticket voting benefit Democratic candidates, or at least does that appear to be the case?
On a certain level, that appears to be the case, and in part it has to do with what political scientists call roll-off, which is not probably a very good term, but it's our term, and so might as well take ownership of it. And the idea of roll-off is that people don't vote for all of the offices all the way to the bottom of the ballot. And there is a fairly broad consensus that voters who are more likely to vote for Democratic candidates are also voters who are more likely to roll off. And of course, that's not to say that every Democratic voter, Democratic-leaning voter does, and you know, certainly it's true of Republicans as well. But it has to do with the correlates are things like education level, like income level, so on and so forth. And to a large extent, those kinds of characteristics are also associated with partisanship. And so on that level, the expectation is that Republican candidates down on the ticket, local offices, things like that, are more likely to benefit from this kind of provision than Democrats are. And so in that sense, from the perspective of legislators as political elites, this is something of a partisan issue. On the other hand, for individual voters, both Republican and Democratic-leaning voters who intend to vote straight ticket benefit from having that provision as part of our ballot. And so
benefit because they don't necessarily have to cast a ballot in every
race.
Right. They can simply mark it one time and they're done.
And it takes care of the whole ballot for them. And that's true of straight ticket voters from both parties. What's interesting to me is that the last time that the legislature put forward this kind of legislation.
2001. Okay.
But it was challenged, is possible for Michigan citizens to challenge laws passed by the legislature. And so there was a what's called a legislative referendum. And in 2002, voters got the chance to decide whether or not to keep that law. The law was passed by the Republican legislature, signed by the Republican governor. Voters had the opportunity to vote against it. Now, I want to circle back around to do that. Yes. This time around, that's not going to be possible, at least the way the law reads now, because they've embedded into the law an appropriation. And appropriations measures, that is, measures that involve some sort of governmental spending, are not subject to referenda. And so in order to keep this out of the hands of voters, they've inserted this provision that, arguably is not really providing much of a benefit to anybody in terms of the actual money.
But it could certainly be questioned whether that follows the spirit of the law. Perhaps the letter, but the spirit of the law seems to be in question.
Exactly. But what happened with the 2001 law is that voters in Michigan soundly rejected it. It lost something like 60-40, the law was overturned, 60% to 40%. What's interesting to me is that it lost in nearly every county in the state, both in Democratic counties and Republican counties, which suggests to me that individual voters from both parties thought this was a bad idea. It was an inconvenience for them personally. And so their perspective on this, it seems to me, is very different. That's at least in part why the current legislature in this current proposal wants to keep it out of the hands of voters, because they're afraid that voters will overturn their carefully crafted plan.
No reason absentee voting would allow people to now get an absentee ballot. They don't have to give a reason, whereas in the past you had to state that either you were going to be out of town, Certainly, I'm sure some people were not completely honest about that and got absentee ballots anyway, but still you are taking a barrier out of the way. And there's a general consensus, I think, amongst people like you who look at politics closely, that if turnout is up, if more people are voting, that is generally going to work in the favor of Democratic candidates. So would no reason absentee voting be something where the Democrats might be able to say, hey, this is something we can use to drive up our numbers?
Potentially so. And certainly both parties and various candidate organizations, frankly, are getting better at sort of targeting in advance potential supporters and making sure that they get a ballot in, whether that's on election day, which is sort of the traditional way that we thought about getting out the vote, or whether it's in advance of the election through the absentee process. There are an awful lot of states that are moving in the direction of this Michigan proposal. They aren't consistent in every state, but to allow more people to participate through some sort of early voting or absentee process. And so in some ways, you know, as a state, we're coming late to that party. But there are also concerns about voter fraud. You know, that we've got folks talking about the need for IDs, but with absentee ballots, there's less ballot security. And so there's a lot of issues that seems to me ought to be considered. But certainly it allows for organizations, campaigns, and parties to try and mobilize voters in a different way. And if it gets more people to vote, then people that are concerned about low turnout probably think that's a good idea.
I mentioned that we're going to have a few elections this year in Michigan. Of course, there's the big November election. We'll have an August primary. In March, the presidential primary will be held in Michigan. And we're seeing members of Michigan's congressional delegation now kind of pick their candidate and line up in various camps for endorsements. This week, Representative Bill Huizinga, who represents the Zeeland area, has endorsed Marco Rubio. He's the second member of the delegation to endorse Rubio, along with John Molinar, who represents Midland. Do these move the needle at all? I mean, does it mean something to a voter when his or her congressional representative says, this is my candidate for president?
Well, this is a political science-y sounding answer, but yes and no. Directly, no, it probably doesn't mean very much to most people to say, gosh, my representative is supporting this candidate. Maybe I should, too. On the other hand, and particularly with a very crowded field like we have right now, there's not a lot of useful information that voters can latch onto that helps them to differentiate candidates. So we've got sort of clusters of candidates, and so there's the what we might call the amateurs. I don't mean that in a pejorative way, but the folks who've not held elective office before, like Donald Trump and like Carly Fiorina and like Ben Carson, and so that's kind of one cluster. Then you've got the, you know, sort of the establishment candidates, and you could divide that list in various ways and so on and so forth. But within those clusters, it's oftentimes difficult for voters to say what's better about a Jeb Bush relative to a Marco Rubio relative to a John Kasich. What separates them? Because in so many instances, their policies are quite similar. I mean, there might be some differences at the edges, and there might be some differences in terms of their backgrounds and their personalities and so on and so forth. But in a policy sense, there's not a lot that is helpful to voters. What endorsements can do is provide that little bit of additional information.
West Michigan Congressman Fred Upton is one of those who has not endorsed a candidate for president yet. I'm wondering, though, that if and when he does his endorsement potentially carry more weight because he's a 30-year member of the House? He's the chairman of Energy and Commerce. Generally, I think, a well-respected member of Congress. Could that be of benefit to someone who is searching to not only win Michigan in the primary, but beyond that, get the Republican nomination across the board?
I would think so. And again, it depends on the exact timing and what the field looks like at that moment. It's pretty safe to say that Representative Upton is part of the Republican establishment. I don't think he would take offense at that. He might use slightly different terminology. And if there were, you know, two or three establishment candidates still in the mix from that sort of wing of the Republican Party, if you will, then the support of somebody like a Fred Upton might help to propel one of them, not necessarily to the nomination, but to at least emerge from that faction of the Republican Party. On the other hand, if there is only one establishment candidate, then You know, the support of somebody like Fred Upton probably won't help as much, in part because of the fact that it'll be that candidate versus candidates from some other wing or wings of the party battling it out for the eventual nomination.
2014 was a pretty quiet year for ballot proposals in Michigan. Basically, it was over wolf hunting, and what the voters ultimately said didn't matter because of legislative action. And then, of course, there was court rulings that came in. But there's a number of issues now where people have at least taken out petitions. Some of those are already off the table. Fracking, the ban on fracking proposed by one group, and repealing the prevailing wage. Both of those groups said that they couldn't get the signatures that they needed. But I'm wondering if we do get a flood of ballot issues again, like, say, we did in 2012. Does that have the potential to influence other races, you know, maybe state legislative races, maybe Congress, et cetera?
It could, and in part it depends on the nature of the ballot proposal. You know, anecdotally, in the neighboring state of Ohio a few years ago, there was kind of a strategy to put a gay marriage ban on the state ballot in hopes that it would mobilize conservative Republicans, religious conservatives who maybe weren't completely enamored with the choices at the top of the ticket that the Republican Party presented in terms of their nominees. And the idea was, if we can get these folks to the polls, we know they're going to support us, but our candidates aren't going to be able to motivate them to get to the polls. And so maybe if we have this ballot issue, maybe that will be what we need to energize the base. Whether or not in a systematic way we can say, oh, yes, this is the phenomenon, this is how it works, I don't think that political science has really figured that out yet. But there certainly are folks who believe it's the case and act accordingly. Now, in presidential years, we get high turnout anyway. Voters are informed about who the candidates are, and they have at least some idea of what their positions are. That isn't necessarily true in midterm elections. And so the information that voters need to cast an informed ballot is more difficult to come by. It may also be the case that some of these folks that are pushing these issues look at the kind of turnout that occurs in presidential election years and say, wow, if we're ever going to get this issue across, we better do it now, because a smaller electorate is less likely to pass whatever it is that folks are proposing. And my guess is, at least with some of the issues that are likely to be on the ballot in Michigan, particularly marijuana, but others as well, that's really the thinking. It's not so much that the issue will mobilize voters, but rather the voters that are mobilized by the presidential race will be more likely to support the ballot proposal.
Well, looking at the issues where they have taken out the petitions and at least are starting to try to collect them, I mean, another one is paid sick leave. That would seem like something which would be more appealing to liberals and progressives. There is talk, although nothing has formally started yet, about changing the redistricting process in Michigan. Is it also possible that in this state, which has gone for presidential candidates in every 4 years now, since going back to Bill Clinton, but where Republicans have the governor's office and both houses of the legislature, that liberals and progressives are looking at the ballot as their best way to accomplish anything on the issues that they care about, that this is the mechanism that they have?
I think that's right. I mean, one of the things about the American political system is that there are many different opportunities for citizens and groups that back certain kinds of issues to try and enter into the policymaking process, whether it's through what we traditionally think of as the lawmaking process through the legislature, or through the courts, or through executive action, or in the case of these proposals, by taking ballot proposals directly to the citizenry. You know, I heard somebody say recently that they're in favor of any neutral process that serves my self-interest. And I think both in terms of the legislative proposal to prohibit the straight ticket voting option. As well as a ballot proposal, potential ballot proposal, to change the way the district lines are drawn. These are decisions that have political implications. And in the short term, they benefit one side relative to the other. In the longer term, we might see them as being, you know, relatively more neutral. But whether it's these, whether it was the proposal a number of years ago for term limits, you know, whatever the case may be, things that on their surface may be neutral and may appear to be neutral to many voters, there are winners and losers from any kinds of change that you make to the political process and to the electoral process. And so from the perspective of some of these groups, yeah, this is probably the time to do it.
John Clark, as always, thank you for your time.
Gordon, it's my pleasure.
John Clark is a political science professor at Western Michigan University.